Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Be Unique Unscripted, because an authentic life is unscripted. Presented by Bronner House Museum, Elisa Kaler, the spiritual therapist, and Little Green Oasis. Unscripted brings you amazing guests and open mic nights every Thursday night at 9 o'clock Eastern Time. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an opportunity to learn more. Visit our calendar on beunique.org to see who we have scheduled to appear next. That's BUNEKE.org.
Welcome to Be Unique Unscripted. I am your host, Mary Brotherton, and I'm here with my co-host, Jean Albertson. How are you doing this evening, Jean?
Howdy, good. How are you? How are you doing?
Doing well. I'm excited. Our pre-show has got me all jazzed up. We've been talking with Carla Bass. She's retired United States Air Force Colonel. She is a writer, and she's won multiple awards for her book called Right to Influence. It's in its second edition. That's pretty impressive. We were just talking about military families and military lifestyles and things, you know. So, and I could talk about the military forever because I have such a strong lineage of military personnel. But we're here tonight mostly to talk about writing to influence, the book and the methodology behind it. Because writing is, we talked about this yesterday, Jean, you and I did, how writing is symbols, a way to express what we're saying without actually speaking. But as a member of the United States Air Force, Carla had to learn to write powerfully. It was much at the core of her success in the Air Force. 30 years, I believe it was. Right, Carla?
Sure was. 30 years, and I do it all again in a heartbeat.
That's so amazing.
Welcome.
That was a weird way of saying welcome to the show. But
this is unscripted, right? No problem.
Absolutely.
It is absolutely unscripted, and it's perfect for me because that's the way I live my life. I don't think I would have made a good military woman because I'm so much in my head and so much spontaneous. My son, 22 years in the Navy, one son did it, one son didn't, and I can see why, because one is like me, the other is much more regimented in his life.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that you composed products for Congress, the White House, ambassadors, and other Air Force personnel for many, many years, didn't you?
Yeah, I've been writing at that level for, this is gonna sound bad, but for 40 years, actually 45, 30 in the Air Force, and then I still work for the federal government. So, you know, every day I go to work and my stuff still goes to Congress and the White House. So I've been at this and I've perfected the technique, you know, a long, long time ago. But to explain how powerful writing was, it was core to my success as a first lieutenant, and for your folks who may not be familiar with the military, that's basically your second assignment coming out of the Air Force. Maybe I was 23, 24 years old. I was selected to compose and then present the daily briefings to the director of the National Security Agency. So that was just nosebleed level presentation. So I learned from my very earliest days how to make every single word count and every second of that very high-ranking person's time play to his advantage.
Yeah.
And then I just perfected that as I continued through the career.
As an editor for Be Unique magazine, I'm constantly reminding my writers, who are actually more like my mentees, we have some very professional writers who are a delight to work with. But then I have some who think that, you know, if the word limit is 500, 1500 should be fine. And have to keep working with them to explain some many, many times, less truly is more.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my little pet peeves, I guess you could call it, is when they say, to learn more, go to this website and call this phone number and email this person. And I'm thinking, just learn more. Here's the website. You don't need all that other gobbledygook because...
That's exactly what I'm all about. It's minimal words maximize the space.
Yep.
Space and impact, too, I would imagine.
Yep. So, you know, because people ask me to distill the book down to one core principle. And I've done that. The message is, actually, if you can imagine, you know, now imagine a white rectangle. And what that represents is space. So... every writer, whether you're fact or fiction, blogging or writing for a general, every writer is constrained by two things. You're constrained by the reader's time because everybody is busy. Tick, tick. What do you want? You know, every time you communicate, you're interrupting somebody. So be very cognizant of the value of their time. But the second constraint is space. So sometimes a government form will have areas that are actually demarcated on the form where you physically are limited to that. Or if you're trying to write in the above the fold on a web page, or if you're having to write an article and you're given a 400 word limitation. So the moral there is the author who best leverages time and space generally wins.
Yes, absolutely. And I will tell you that I have a very warm spot in my editorial heart for the writers who respect that space.
Mm-hmm.
They understand that a word count is a word count. They respect that a due date doesn't mean it's a suggestion. They get their work into me ahead of time. And then I have others that, you know, I have to keep pressing and pressing. And if you're listening, writers, you know who you are, so I'm not going to mention names.
I know who I am.
So one of the things I bring to the table is I teach people how to take that initial draft and applying my 10 word sculpting tools, you go sentence by sentence by sentence, and you reduce it from one page down to maybe half a page or maybe less once you learn what the techniques are, to identify those useless words, the redundancies, the words that hog space, and basically bureaucratic blather. It's so easy to learn, and it's actually like a scavenger hunt because you're hunting for those nasty little words, and once you learn to recognize them, it's like, oh, I found another one. Oh, I can reduce that.
Yes,
and it's actually fun.
It can be. It's like a puzzle. It's like almost like what is it they do in restaurants when they destructuring or deconstruct? You kind of deconstruct your work and look at it with a very critical eye and say, what can I do to make this better? How can I make this say what I want it to say without all the other work? A lot of people will add into their writing things like, in other words, I don't want your other words. Just give me the words I need. And, another pet peeve is when they say festivities include the dunking booth, the face painting, and this and that and the other, among others, many more.
Yep.
You've already said that by adding the word include. That means there could be a lot more, but those are the highlights.
That would be an example of a redundancy.
Oh, yes.
And the reason why this makes so much difference, when I was a lieutenant colonel in Hawaii, I was assigned a squadron of 480 super talented young men and women. When I arrived at that station, it was the most losing unit. It was almost a joke. It was the most losing unit in the statewide quarterly and annual professional awards, which was hurting the careers of a lot of deserving people because they were talented. What was wrong is that their bosses were unable to write winning nomination packages. So through no fault of their own, the supervisors were trying to help, but they didn't know how to write. So I took 3 days vacation. I sequestered myself in a beach cabin, and that's where I came up with the concept of my word sculpting tools and those 10 techniques. So I turned that into a very small handbook. I mean, we're talking mimeograph-type handbook, and I taught my guys how to write. And pretty soon we started sweeping the awards. We became the unit to beat. And then the other units came and asked if I could teach them too, which of course I did. But what really blew me away, because you know, my concern was for my people. But what I recognized is that there was this huge vacuous need. I had no idea. So for the next 15 years, wherever my assignments took me, I continued to teach the right to influence the word sculpting because it makes such a difference. So the lesson I took out of that, it was a life-changing lesson for me too. My battle cry is that powerful writing changes lives because it does. We proved it. So, example, you could be the most talented person, the perfect candidate for job X, but if your competition is better at telling their story than you, you lose and the employer loses because he inadvertently hired the less appropriate person. So,
right. So
you need to be able, you mentioned impact earlier, that is so right. So you need to be able to, in minimal words, maximum impact, using detail to flesh out the story so that the reader has a complete grasp on how many, how soon, how fast, number one out of how many. You have to be able to tell that powerful story. And it's not only for your resume, it's if you're trying to defend a budget, if you're trying to compete for research and development funds, pretty much anything where you have to convince somebody else of something else, this is where this writing methodology comes to play.
Yeah.
You didn't mention it yet, but it was in your bio that you also do grant submissions. And as the person within Be Unique who does our grant submissions, I've been pretty successful, but I totally get that it's about not just the fact that you can tell a story, but how well you tell that story and how convincingly it comes across.
That's true. And then the other factor, especially for grants, but this applies to anything you're writing, you have to know your audience. And you have
yes.
to empathize with the audience, and you have to, whatever you're trying to communicate, you need to communicate it from the perspective of the intended recipient. So when I teach my grant workshops, now virtual presentations because there aren't any more in-person workshops, but the first thing I tell people is go out and do your homework on the grant maker. What are the grant makers? Mission, values, goals, what other grants have they provided to other people for what projects. Learn everything you can about that person and then write your story explaining how you can benefit them. And it's
right.
the same thing with the resume. The resume is not about me, 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 me. You're supposed to be telling the story to the potential employer. Here's how you benefit by hiring me. So it's all in the perspective, and it's got to be empathy, and you have to know the audience.
And I can tell you, for many years, I would submit resumes thinking in terms of, I need a job. And when I switched from I need a job to let me help you.
Yep.
It totally changed my career outlook.
Mm-hmm.
You also help people, you mentioned earlier, input to performance reviews. And a lot of people don't realize that the military is not the only place where we have performance reviews. A lot of corporations still do that,
and the federal government too.
Yes, and it's. I would think that it is vital to be able to go in there. I mean, especially if you're a nervous person who doesn't do well with feeling like you're being judged or reviewed or critiqued. Maybe if you go in there ahead of time with something written, it'll help you prepare internally as much as outwardly.
Yep. So I want to mention this before I forget. There is so much pain out there right now with people who have lost jobs or people where they might have wanted grants before, they truly, truly need them now. And then for the input to performance reviews on my website, www.writetoinfluence.net, I recently composed three free ebooks. The first one is called Write to Win a Standout Resume. The second one is Write to Win a Grant Submission. And the third is Write to Win a performance review. And what I've done in each of those documents is I've distilled from the Write to Influence book. I've taken that material and just laser focused it on those three particular topics. So all you have to do is go to the website and download those. And you know, I'm here trying to help wherever I can. But on the performance, the input to the performance review, people are so gun-shy about that. They feel like they're bragging. They don't know how to keep track of what their accomplishments were. They don't know how to quantify and present them. You know, the first thing I tell people to do is keep a job diary, a job journal. If your organization doesn't have a weekly activity report, keep track yourself on what you've done, but not just what you've done, what the impact was. And one of the ways you figure that out is what would have happened if you had not done X, or because you did X, this happened. And look beyond your immediacy, your immediate environment, and see like a pebble in the pond. Your action was that pebble in the pond. Step back and see if you can find the subsequent ripples. What would not have happened if you hadn't taken that particular action? What benefit did you bring others? And then capture that as it happens. So at the end of the year, when the boss says, oh, I have to do your performance review, give me some input, you're not scratching your head saying, oh, geez, what did I do 8 months ago? So
yeah,
nobody
exactly.
cares
yep.
about your career more than you. So you know, be aggressive. Take credit. Own your success.
Absolutely.
And it's not, you know, a lot of people have been taught, don't brag, don't boast. But it's not if it's a fact.
Well, that's exactly right. If you're objective and you're honest and you're factual, or the other thing is you can pretend that you're writing about somebody else. Pretend that you're characterizing this stuff for a subordinate that you want to get promoted. You know, anything to get yourself out of the I'm beating my chest like the gorilla, because that's certainly not the case.
Right, exactly. Well, you know, too, and the thing that is that if you look good, your boss looks good, and if they look good, you look good. And if you can tell your boss that, and then honestly, I've had great success writing things for my bosses that they can just basically cut and paste in my reviews and things. Not necessarily that they would, but the work they don't have to worry about. They know I'm doing this. I show them what I'm doing, and they just report it. It really takes a burden off them, actually, a lot of times.
Well, and the other thing that that people need to do is take value your name, value your reputation. The old cliche about good enough for government work, we've heard that forever. But if you turn into your boss something that's substandard, or you expect the boss to catch your mistakes because you are too lazy to do it yourself, you're harming yourself, you're harming your reputation. So no matter how well you characterize what you've accomplished, if you turn in shoddy work, that's going to counteract any good that you can expect from your actions. You have to take pride in what you do.
Absolutely.
And if you're not proud of what you're doing, nobody else will be proud of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep.
Folks, I have to take a break for two reasons. I have to play this little commercial, and I need a sip of tea. I'll be right back.
Okay.
Only once every few years does a show come along that makes you think, makes you care, makes you believe the impossible. A show featuring only the best in writing, acting, and directing. Until that show comes along, we suggest Paranoria, Texas. Thrill to the adventures of six super-powered nerds on a never-ending quest to take over the world. and to complete their collection of She-Hulk comics. Paranoria, Texas, Monday nights at 8 p.m. Central on AstronetRadio.com.
I thought for a minute they were talking about Be Unique Unscripted. Folks, we are back with Gene Albertson and Carla Bass, retired United States Air Force colonel. Also, she is the author of Right to Influence, which is now in its second edition and has won numerous awards. If you want to know more about her book or her, go to righttoinfluence.net. But meanwhile, I'm kind of intrigued about some of the places you've served. You mentioned Hawaii, but you've also been in Germany, Bulgaria, Korea, and Washington, D.C. Now, are you working? You said you're working for the government. Are you working for Washington or just another branch elsewhere?
I'm working for a federal agency.
Ah.
But of those assignments, Turkey. I was in Turkey also. The assignment that was most unique was Bulgaria. I was the defense attaché there. And to explain that in non-military terms, I was the senior U.S. military representative representing all of America's military to our counterparts in Bulgaria. So I was there for 3 years, and my daily clients were I had about 16 different four-star generals that I supported, both in Europe and then back here in America. But that was a fascinating assignment. I was the first woman assigned to that position, which was kind of groundbreaking in itself. So you're out there on the pointy edge of the sword, and I had a wonderful staff, and we were, Bulgaria had broken out from the Iron Curtain. They'd been out for about 7 years. And they were dying to become members of NATO, and that occurred while I was there. So it was a perfect time to be there, very historic period.
Isn't it great to be involved in something that you realize this is changing the course of history?
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people are involved in that and may not realize it. They don't stop for the moment and go, oh, I'm going to be changing history with this action. And I think most of us don't, but it actually, in hindsight, you look back and go, wow, that's world changing.
Oh, you're so busy doing or accomplishing what needs to be done. There's time for hindsight and there's time just, focus on getting the job done.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, I've got a question. Have you ever had one of those four-star generals look at what you've written for him and say, wait, no, this is too brief. This is too short. I think we need to say more.
No.
That's good. Now, is that because they respected you to that level or because they just had no time to say more?
No, because I recognized the fact that anything that they signed needed to be short and concise, precise, concise, compelling, and so forth. And I knew how to write that way.
Wow. That's good.
So, again, it comes back to knowing the audience. Most of the letters, the executive correspondence, needs to be one page. No wasted words, no redundancies. Get to the point. Bureaucratic blathery type things that's ubiquitous to correspondence, business, and in the government now is this is my horse before the cart, where people waste so many sentences and paragraphs in the opening of whatever the document is before they get to the main point. They feel like they have to set so much context before they finally get to the point that by the time you get to the point, you've lost the reader.
Right.
So one of the things that I teach is get if you have the reader's attention for 15 seconds, like if you're briefing a general and you've got him for just 15 seconds, out of all of the stuff that you want to say, what's the most important? Put that first, and all the background, all the ancillary, you have to it's all the strategy. You have to strategize your message in the time. And if people would recognize that the audiences are busy, put the most important stuff up front and then follow up with the background. And that happens in email, too. People just write paragraphs and paragraphs within an email, and they're wondering why it is that the recipients don't respond to A, all of their points, or don't respond at all. It's because you haven't presented it in a form that makes it easy for the recipient to answer.
Right.
So in the topic line, in the subject line, if there's an action, say, action, colon, and then specify. If you have 3 points, say, you know, Dear Jane, I've got 3 points, and then actually number them, 1, 2, 3. You need to help the reader to help you. So you just kind of pre-digest it for them.
Yeah, and I know that you have been talking about sculpting and word sculpting. I found something else that you had said. You put your writing on a diet.
Yes. So if you don't apply this writing methodology, you end up writing fat. So when you have your initial draft, and you know the goal of the initial draft is just get your thoughts on paper. Hopefully you've followed an outline so that you can have some structure and make sure that you're on target. I mean the outline is like a roadmap to get you from point A to point B, but the first draft is going to be fat. Nobody writes powerfully and perfectly with the first draft. And unfortunately, academia now and for many, many years has not taught kids how to write skinny. They come out writing fat. And so employers, they are eagerly seeking people with this kind of writing skill because they know time is money. All right, the customers that they're trying to court, everyone is busy, so you have to be able to get your message across, get it precisely, get it done, and get off the stage. But people haven't been taught to write like that. It's kind of a lost art that I'm trying to rejuvenate. So the whole concept is write skinny, not fat. Here's an example. Verbs are your friends. This is one of my word sculpting tools. I explain it like this. Imagine a hard-boiled egg. Seriously, imagine a hard-boiled egg. Now make that hard-boiled egg 8 foot tall. Honkin' hard-boiled egg. Focus on the yolk. The yolk is the verb. The white is all that stuff that we now suffocate the verb with. So, for example, provide protection. To reduce the amount of time is expedite.
Mm-hmm.
Keep to a minimum is minimize. In response to, place an emphasis on is emphasize. You know, I could go on and on.
My words just lost me. They just ran away from me. I had it all in my head just a half a second ago. The words end in ing, the being, mm-hmm. the passive language.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I love when people write, she is going to be going to the store. I'm like, no, she just goes to the store.
This was one of my 4 redundancies that I've identified. They met to discuss. So very, very often in correspondence, in official correspondence, people will put the chronological preceding verb, in this case it would be we met to discuss,
mm-hmm.
when that is completely irrelevant to what you're trying to communicate. If you don't care that they met to discuss, then can that and just say they discussed. But people are so, you know, step A, step B, step C. But this is the type of thing that you go through when you word sculpt. You look for those redundancies, and after you've got that first draft, then you hone it. And that's how you go from fat to skinny.
And, you know, that makes sense because it doesn't matter how the discussion took place, whether it was over the phone, through Zoom, through email, or if you actually physically met. The purpose mm-hmm. of that discussion is what's important.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So I call that the double tap verb. So that's one of the things that you look for when you're revising that first draft.
I hadn't thought of it as a double tap, but that makes perfect sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, double tap.
I would imagine salesperson or someone in marketing would benefit from one of your workshops?
Well,
because they're pitching a product, but you don't need all that, the redundancy of what they're saying. Just pitch and go.
Marketing. I had a government agency. I was very grateful for this. It was within the Department of Interior. They were having a difficult time with their annual budgets because they were, at that point, unsuccessful in explaining to up the management chain what the impact of their previous year's accomplishments were. So I developed an entire day's workshop for them based on their own material. So they gave me their materials. I call it before-after analysis. They gave me their before materials. I applied my writing methodology to them, and then I used that in their workshop. So I say, okay, this is how you began writing this budget justification, and I showed them using my techniques and strategies all the things that were wrong with that. And then I said, now, let's fix it. And then they saw the after version, and then I walked them step by step for the analysis so they could actually watch the transformation. So, you know, it's marketing, it's your own personal development, it's the grants, it's the I don't want my budget cut. Okay, so you're looking at a 30% budget reduction. Explain to me why I shouldn't take your money. What you better be able to very strategically and powerfully, point by point, nail, explain with justification, with those details, why it is that that you shouldn't be cut. And if you can tell that kind of a story, you're going to succeed.
Mm-hmm. And don't you find that when people can write succinctly and powerfully, they can also speak that way?
Oh, exactly. It's just it's a way of thinking. And then the other beauty to this is once you begin to develop the skill, and it's you don't do it overnight. I mean, it's like a sculptor, a master sculptor. It takes a while to develop that. But what happens is once you begin thinking like that, you recognize these flaws in other writing that comes across your desk, and that actually strengthens your skills because you're seeing how you could actually improve these other products, and so that reinforces what you've been learning and what you practice.
That makes perfect sense. It sounds simple. But like you said, it's so simple that it's hard for a lot of people to grasp because they think powerful writing must be tomes of words.
No. And that's the other beauty about this book. I speak to the reader just like I'm speaking to you. The book talks in terms of Goldilocks and Mary Poppins and Rumpelstiltskin and hard-boiled eggs and garden gates. It's not a grammar book. It's not stuffy. And it has 200 exercises with the answers. So you can actually test your skills as you go through a particular chapter. Test your skills, and then you flip to the back of the book, and there you've got it. So when I teach this, I teach it from the perspective of an inverted triangle. The top of it, the wide swath of the triangle is the strategy. You have to strategize the message, and that comes back to knowing the audience, what are your key points, horse before the cart, and so forth. And when you get down to the bottom point of the triangle, that's where you break in those word sculpting tools and you actually hone the draft. But this is all laid out. It's very, very simple. Another one of the strategies is frame your message. Are there questions that you have to respond to in a given product? If so, you use those questions like a house to frame the house to frame your message. What else? So the first part of the book talks about strategies. The second part goes into those word sculpting tools. The third part is where you apply this stuff. So there's a chapter now. And the second edition, there are 70 more pages in it than the first edition. It's all based on material I developed for all these workshops or now virtual presentations that I give.
Uh-huh.
So now there's a chapter on grants, a chapter on writing the essay for college applications, resumes, presentations, what else? There are several other daily elevator speech. You need to be able, whether you're seeking a job or pitching a book or pitching a product, boom, you've got 90 seconds. What's your pitch? So I give people tips on how to write that and then practice it out loud. And then the fourth part, the last part of the book, is where the exercises reside. But this is all doable, and it's a friggin' life skill. So you learn it once, and this thing is a benefit forever. I just wish it were taught in high school, because if the kids could learn this now, my goodness, the opportunities that are out there for them.
Sure. Oh, absolutely. I agree. When I taught at the university, literally first fall semester students, we all spent the first part of the class teaching them how to write a composition.
Mm-hmm.
It was crazy, but it was true, and had to do it.
And, you know, this isn't just, you'd mentioned about speaking. This isn't just about writing. So, for example, if you're going in for a job interview, if you play your cards right, you strategize your thoughts before you even walk into that interview. So you already will have known about the company. You already know what their weaknesses are and how it is that you can help them. So what you need to do is have three very short messages in your hip pocket that you want to weave into the conversation. Three points, that screeching halt, at least you got those 3 points in the conversation. And then the last thing in your hip pocket is, what is the last thing you want them to remember as you walk out the door? What are the final words that you want to come out of your mouth? Because that's a last impression. The person that actually strategizes that and thinks it in advance and actually practices it out loud, you know, verbally, rehearses it, so that when that split second comes, boom, it's just fluid like an actor on the stage. So all of it's all about strategic communication. It's not just writing. It also applies to speeches as well.
Well, I would imagine that would be almost doubly so, because you have to know what you're going to talk about, but you also have to commit
mm-hmm.
it somewhat to memory, because you don't
mm-hmm.
want to be standing there with a bunch of cue cards
mm-hmm.
or, you know, people do teleprompters nowadays, but still you don't want to be constantly looking at the teleprompter. You want it to come from you to every individual. You want every individual in your audience to think, gosh, that person is speaking just to me.
Mm-hmm.
Make it personal, and that's a skill so few people possess, and I can't imagine why more people wouldn't buy your book. I really can't, because I know that it's already on my list of things for me to buy in 2021. I had to work through a certain of the things this year before I could get to it, but it's definitely on my list, because it's so vital in so many ways.
Well, if you know, for the listeners out there, if you have children, kids in high school or college or even graduate school, now is the time to, and I'm not saying this to sell books. I truly am not. This is a way to help them for their future. But if they start practicing this now in high school, what that does is it precludes 4 years or 8 years of developing the wrong muscles. If they can start learning now to write skinny, they will be so far ahead of the competition when they graduate, because the others are learning the wrong skill set. The mentality of, give me a 5,000 word paper. So the human instinct is, if I give you just a little bit of meat and lots of fluff, well, then I make the grade. And unfortunately, the system lets you get by with that. And so you do that time and time and time and time again. And when you graduate and when the pedal's on the metal here and you're out there looking for a job, you discover that, well, crumb. There are so many jobs out there, for example, for strategic communications, for marketing and outreach, but they all ask for samples of your writing. And that's
yes,
where you get yourself
yes.
into a pinch. You mentioned, you know, you're a newspaper, I'm sorry, a magazine editor. I've been privileged. There's a Military Officers of America Association. It's a it has a distribution of 350,000 people, and I've had four articles published in it. The most recent one was in the November, and these are all on my website under the free tips page. All of the articles that I've written on substantive applications like cover letters and resumes and so forth. But the one that came out in November is called From Presentation to Performance. It's a one-page article with several tips on here's how you develop the storyline, here's how you write impactful slides, and here are some tips on how to deliver it. So, you know, the joy is taking the methodology and applying it to real life to help people progress and succeed and nail those goals.
And, you know, it's all well and good that you wrote the book, but you wouldn't have written it if you didn't care about people and helping them be better.
When my dad commissioned me, he gave me three pieces of advice, I've practiced them, till the day I die, I will. The first one was put blinders on, stay focused on your mission, and don't get caught up in office politics, stay focused on the job. The second one was always, always take care of your people, and they'll take care of you. And the third was always keep your sense of humor. And so what I discovered in Hawaii with the 324th Intelligence Squadron, I learned there the critical connection between powerful writing and career progression, not for me, but how I was able to help propel the careers of deserving people by teaching them and their bosses how to tell a story. And so that harkened back to my dad's advice of take care of your people. It was all about taking care of the people. And that's why I'm so passionate about this now. I still get email from folks back in Hawaii. I got a wonderful email that said, Colonel Bass, you probably don't remember me. I was a senior airman, which is a very junior enlisted person, back in the 324th. I kept that little handbook that you made. I kept it for 18 years. Because you taught me how to write, I was accepted into officers training school. I just retired after 20 years as an officer, and I'm now the vice president of a defense corporation because you taught me to write.
Wow.
All right.
Nice.
That's sweet. What keeps me going.
Mm-hmm. That'll do it.
Yep.
That's awesome.
That is such a compliment to you and to your skill, that little... Probably, what was it, maybe four pages?
The handbook, I think it was like 18. It was 18, but it was, okay. I mean, it was embarrassingly simple. This was 1994 that I developed this concept. And then when I retired, it took me a couple of years. This thing has been in my soul since then. So when I retired, I had to develop all this corporate and business world material, because the Air Force examples that I use wouldn't play. So for years I'd play with it, I'd put it down, I'd put it up, put it down, and I finally had this long conversation with myself. It's, Carla, you either flush this, just get it out of your system and turn your back on it, or get down and get to work. I'm going to use a double negative now. I could not write the book, because I had testimonial upon testimonial upon testimonial on how it actually changes lives. And it would have been wrong for me not to write the book and not to teach the workshops and not to put it out there, because it makes such a difference.
Yes.
I'm stumbling over this not double negative, because there are times that is the only way to express it. And it sounds like you're a grammarian like I am. And there are certain things that just grate on your nerves. And I thought it was just really cool the way you said, I'm going to use a double negative, kind of be prepared. I'm going to do this. I don't want to, but it's going to be done.
I had the quintessential English teacher, Mrs. Gelwicks, in seventh grade, And she beat grammar into me, and I loved it. And because I ended up with such a strong foundation in English grammar, then I went on and I studied Bulgarian, Turkish, German, Latin, Russian, and French. And all of that made perfect sense because I had such a good grounding in English grammar.
Hats off to you, lady.
Yeah.
I speak just enough Russian to be laughed at and just enough Spanish to get myself into a world of trouble.
Well, I suck at math, so all the balance is out.
But I'm always amazed at people who are multilingual because it's a skill that I've always coveted but never had the, I don't know, I guess I've just never had the motivation to pursue it fully.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it is what it is. I prefer to be an expert in English, and I'm not really an expert in English, although people think I am. I founded
don't
a writer's
tell
group.
Tell them that.
Well, 11 years ago, I started my own writer's group, and we've been meeting religiously every 2 weeks with very few exceptions. And we'll have a few confessional type discussions. And then finally somebody will say, okay, Mary, you're the editor. You have the final say on this. What do you think? Does this comma stay or does it go?
Mm-hmm. Oh, commas, God. On my grave tombstone, it's going to say, Carla loves the Oxford comma.
Yes.
I just adore the Oxford comma. People think I'm nuts. But listen, segue, your writer's group, I had the best time because this whole methodology, it applies to fiction too. I'd like to say an avid reader, but I'm so friggin' busy. I don't have time very, very often to actually enjoy a book, which means when I do, it better be a damn good book.
Yes, ma'am.
So my favorite author is, it was Daniel Silva, but he's been replaced by Dean Koontz. Because every word that Koontz writes is significant. So I developed a workshop, and I've written a couple of articles called Spin That Captivating Tale. And what I teach authors of fiction how to make their writing crisp and punchy and how to write not fat but skinny there also. And then in that workshop, I give really examples from – very carefully from actual books that I call them swimming pool books, so that if you're floating in a pool, it's a paperback, and if you read one or two sentences on the page, you can flip it and not miss anything, and if you fall in the water, who cares?
So I hate those books.
The idea is not to write a swimming pool book. So here's how you take one paragraph in the swimming pool book, you apply my writing methodology to it, and the eyeballs just go, oh, I get it. And then I reinforce that with hard-hitting examples from Daniel Silva's book called The Heist. That's wonderful. I've got so many examples. In that book, he crams so much meaning into one sentence. It's breathtaking. But in that workshop, I show them, here's examples from Daniel Silva, from Dean Koontz. Diana Gabaldon is also masterful at paint. Well, she does with words what Michelangelo did with paint.
Yeah.
So those three authors are my go-to for here's how you write, and here's how you take crappy writing and apply my methodologies and the before the after analysis, and here's how you can tighten it up. So apply this to your drafts, your fiction, and go for it.
Yeah, my son was, I don't know, 8 or 9, and for whatever reason, we were constantly going back and forth to doctor's offices an hour away from our home. This was many years ago. And we would go to the library and get a Dean Koontz book on cassette and listen to it on all of his doctor's visits. And as he is now, he's such a snobby reader that he actually will burn a book if it displeases him. And it takes a lot. And he's a little bit like me in the fact that I'm going to keep reading and hope that this author will redeem itself.
I'm with your son. I won't burn it, but if I can't get past the first three paragraphs without a whole bunch of wasted words and fluff, I'm not interested anymore.
I actually had somebody hand me a book and said, "Oh, you've got to read this book. It's great." And I'm not going to say what the book is because it became a worldwide bestseller and they made a movie out of it. But my son looked at the, I said, "Okay, Aunt Jane gave me this book." She said, "I really need to read it." And I've really not wanted to read it because I just didn't think it was for me. And he looked at it. He says, "Oh, well, Tara, who is his cousin, made me read it." And I'm going to tell you, you have to go to chapter 8 before it gets good. I said, "Oh hell no.
Yeah.
That's not happening." If I have to, and I just recently reviewed a book for the magazine that had a 13-page prologue and a 13-page epilogue. In between all that gobbledygook was a decent book. But they could have cut out 26 pages quickly and easily.
Yep. So, I value an author who values my time. And I think, and some of these authors, I mean, we're talking major New York Times bestsellers, and I won't give them the time of day anymore. And I don't know if it's I've become snobby's not more refined, more selective.
I like
more,
that word.
Okay. Or if they've gotten sloppy and fat because they get these big paychecks, so they're not so hungry, so they don't have to write as well as what they used to. Because I don't remember some of these guys being as bad back then as they are now. So either they got sloppy or my taste became more refined. But there is a
could
huge
be a combination.
Disconnect.
Could be a combination.
So Dean Koontz is my hero.
Oh, I love any writer who makes me read with a dictionary close by.
Oh, amen to that.
And I have been known, I mean, I read all over my house. Every room of my house has at least one book. Because I'm reviewing books, I have one spot that has all my review books in one section so that I can keep up with them. But I have my personal books in every single room, and usually I have a notepad and a pen. But I've been known, if I don't have a notepad and pen, to pull out the toilet paper and mark the pages so I can come back and find the word that I need to look up.
I do the same thing.
To me, a writer who makes me go, "What? Wait a minute, that's a new word. Where did that come from?" I can always get it from the context, which is brilliant. But I also want to know, what exactly was that word? And Dean Koontz is the king of that.
Oh, that's wonderful. Every now and then, working with these government documents, I will try to slip in a word or two that's just a little bit more elegant than normal, and they usually get deleted, which is too bad. But I can't think of any more. But I've got this whole wonderful list of delicious words that they just didn't quite make it.
Yeah,
my newsletter came out today. I do a twice monthly newsletter, and these are just chocked full of. In fact, I put a lot of work in these things of writing tips. They're surprise, surprise. They're succinct, but they're super meaty and super focused. I use the word puissant in the opening line. This time, I love that word. A powerful, and the whole focus of this particular newsletter is that good news is a puissant marketing tool. If you know how to leverage it right, man, you can just milk good news like crazy for marketing, for establishing credibility with your clients, for intriguing new clients. An example of that was our local fire station about. Oh, I guess it was last month, just a couple weeks ago, was awarded a $60,000 grant because they wrote the submission based on my methodology. So I posted that to LinkedIn, and that thing has gotten almost 650 views now. So that's a good example of marketing good news.
Yes. And just for the listeners who may not know what puissant means, it just means having great power or influence.
Yep.
Gene and I do a daily show for 15 minutes called Take a Break with Gene and Mary. And on weekdays, we have nothing to do with each other for the weekend, most weekends. but we usually have a word of the day. And I think it's time to pull up some deeper words than we've been using.
Yeah, definitely. Poison sounds good.
The listeners that we have are not many because it's a new show. We're only about 2.5 months old. But we're gaining listeners, and they love our word of the day. So I like that. I'm going to tell you guys something that's going to really, but it's already broken my heart. We have 4 minutes left. I just did the one commercial, but I knew when we first started talking that we were just going to go gangbusters, because once you mentioned Dean Koontz, I was in love. I forget sometimes how much I love his writing, and to find another Koontz fan just makes me happy, because I know you get it.
Oh, completely, completely.
But I want to take a minute to make sure that our listeners know your website is writetoinfluence.net. And you're giving away free ebooks and what was the other? Free ebooks, right?
Yeah, the three free ebooks. It's all on the website there. And the other services that I offer, I have had to completely overhaul my entire business model because of COVID, since it pains me we're not doing workshops right now, because I love people, but I do them virtually. So I do virtual presentations. There's a whole slew of different subject matters that I cover. It's all on the website. I also do private counseling for like 90 minutes I've tailored programs where I've coached a local strategic communications office for 8 hours that I interspersed the 8 hours over the course of a month, and I would provide here's a before version based on what I explained to you. You tackle it. So there were like back and forth homework assignments. So it's always very interactive and with their material, so that they can learn more easily based on their own stuff. But the website has all sorts of other ways that I'm there to help. And the free tips page, there's just a litany of the various articles that I've written, podcasts, TV, radio, interviews, and then there's a drop-down page with other articles. So it is literally a virtual library of a lot of other material that I've put. It's all free. Just, go knock yourselves out and help yourself. If you're having difficulties with the post-interview thank you note or more information on here's how you strategize, here's how you prepare for the job interview, or in anything, it's all there.
Wow.
That's awesome.
That is generous. That's amazing.
And the newsletter. Well, if people want to sign up for the newsletter, there's a way to do that as well.
Okay.
Well, and the beauty is that easily people can go to your website and very quickly and easily get all the information that you learned all the years you've been doing this.
Yes.
Just like that.
Yep.
Awesome.
Folks, we're down to 90 seconds, and this show is going to cut off. So,
all right.
Carla, do you have any parting words for our audience?
Just that powerful writing changes lives. I mean, do yourself a favor, do the people whom you love a favor, and grab the writing methodology. It makes all the difference. And I'm here to help. So Carla@writetoinfluence.net, here to serve.
Awesome.
Thank you. Thank you.
I am so grateful that you came and joined us tonight. This has been as enlightening as I expected it would be. My parting words are, whatever you do, be kind. Gene, take us out with your final words.
Everything I do, I always remember, if I'm not having fun, I'm not doing it right. So. Good evening.
And that's
everyone.
All,
Thank
folks.
Thank you so much, Carla.
Good night.
If you like the show tonight, let us know. Call 321-417-4309 or email mary@beunique.org to ask how you can sponsor the show. It's simple and doesn't have to cost much at all. Visit beunique.org for even more details. That's BUNEKE.org.